The University Tower chimes bring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the College for Creative Studies, it's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
So,
sort of.
It's been a long week, huh?
Yeah, I'm stretched about as thin as Oprah's girdle right about now.
Oh, wow.
It's a little rough and tumble.
Although I do understand that you have something to crow about after last weekend. You and Chuck, I know, and a few others.
We won the Detroit Trivia Soiree.
That's pretty cool.
You know, we done very well.
We're in the belt.
It's kind of snug, but, you know, it works. So.
Where was it again?
It was at the Two-Way Inn.
Two-Way Inn.
It was a good time.
So we've already heard the voice of Professor Chuck Hokett. How are you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing good. This is getting ready for baseball.
Oh, yeah,
Ready for the Tigers. And my cable was out.
Oh, no.
I woke up this morning. This is a reboot. You know how this is a reboot?
Oh.
Called them. Oh, we'll send you two boxes. So I'm waiting for the UPS man to come.
Oh, my gosh. Professor Dan Maggio is here from the Lego First organization.
Hi, Matt.
What's up?
Don't watch you.
Thanks for bringing the cookies. And thanks, Chuck, for bringing the chocolates, too. It's always good to get the afternoon sugar fix when you really need it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when someone else figures that problem out for you. It's like, oh, yeah, it's the afternoon. Oh, yeah, here's some stuff.
Remember, we have a stash of stuff.
That's right.
Oh,
that's
last right. Couple weeks ago, right?
Right. This is fresh. So, you know, it just feels
this
different.
Is just in case for the nuclear winter, right?
That's exactly. Exactly.
The spam and the saltine crackers.
Right. So we had a little hiatus last week because I was under the weather. You probably can still sort of hear that through the microphone, but we're back. And this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet at us using @AskTheProfUDM or #AskTheProfUDM on Twitter. Or find us on Facebook. As a matter of fact, you can find a bunch of nice Facebook pictures linked to your guys' trivia crown being given if you go to our Facebook page. And Alex Hitchell actually just started something up that was posted just a couple days ago, right, about Thomas Patrick O'Shaughnessy, who founded our Facebook page as a fan, and a little bit about him. So it's kind of cool.
Oh.
We were into speaking, I think he's in California, which is why suddenly the light goes on in my head. We were looking at these questions from Amber Hubley of San Diego, California. We were just starting them off during our last show so we can continue with those. They're kind of all over the map, and I hope it keeps the professors guessing. Okay, it's an interesting kind of question. What company makes the batteries that are used for the Toyota Prius, a battery-powered car?
Wasn't there a company in Ann Arbor, like 123 or whatever it was, that was making
it? It was a Toyota spinoff, but that's definitely not where they get the batteries. They need mass production.
That was more of like one of the obvious ones?
Union Carbide?
Alkaline?
No, it's not really that obvious. I would think you would probably call this an electronics company before you would call it anything else.
Not
Sony. Not Toshiba.
LCG. What is it? LGC?
LG?
Starts with the letter P.
Phillips?
Nope. You guys are hitting all the right notes, though.
Pagnabox?
Panasonic.
Panasonic is what it is.
I knew you were
getting close. You were getting close.
You were very close here.
It was a good joke, though, Dan, because growing up, listening to my dad, you know, classic boomer-aged guy, talk about, you know, brand names and stuff, whenever we saw something that was clearly, you know, that last one they throw in at Best Buy just to, like, make the other prices look good. I'd be like, how come we're not looking at this one? He's like, oh, it's the Magnet Box edition. He would make up some fake, you know, brand.
Of course, you know, a huge conglomeration of other names, kind of. It works.
For what TV show did actress Anne B. Davis win two Emmys?
Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch.
That's the deal. It wasn't for her famous role as Alice on the Brady Bunch.
Oh.
But she was on with Cunnings.
Yeah, that's right.
What's his name?
Very well
Welcome
done.
Bob or something Bob.
The Bob Cummings Show,
yeah,
and she run for the role of Schultz.
Really?
Yeah.
She was nominated four times and won twice.
That's where she started her career, I believe.
Was that before Brady Bunch?
Oh, yeah.
Way before.
Yeah.
Pretty
crazy. I don't know how I know that.
Did you know that she was born in Erie, Pennsylvania, where I am from?
There you go.
That explains a few things.
A couple signs going into town, birthplace of Dan Maggio.
Andy Davis. Andy Davis is in the smaller letters. Dan's name is a lot
awesome.
Larger, right?
So. Totally awesome.
At least that is my understanding.
So I'm going to modify this question a little bit because whenever we get very specific, what Amber's asking for here, it's just a little bit too easy if I turn my head to the right and take a look at our continental map of the United States here.
It's a geography question.
This would be a little more difficult if I just tweak it slightly. How many states are in, or at least one part of the state, is in the Eastern time zone?
Indiana? Illinois.
No, how many total states are partially in the Eastern time zone?
Ooh, 16?
No, it's higher than 16.
Well, you figure the original 13 counties.
Yeah, right.
Plus
21?
I'm giving it to you. It's 22.
22.
Yeah. All right.
22. Very well done.
Which one did I miss? Gotcha.
The most individual states of any of our glorious time zones. Kind of interesting.
Oh, they're the tinier ones, too. So.
Well, but don't we have, I know Indiana's kind of a half and half state.
Indiana's half.
Ohio's strictly.
Yeah.
Maybe Tennessee Illinois. Is a half and half. Illinois. I don't know. Yeah. No, Illinois, I think, is central. I want to say central. So, yeah, very cool. Oh, she wanted you to name all the states, and I was just sort of like, I figured you guys would just look at the map and play geography and
no,
see how that works out.
We're not that good, and the tiny states will always forget one.
Right. So. What brand of laundry detergent sued the band The Doors for using a phrase, stronger than dirt, in its 1968 hit, Touch Me?
Where's Jason when we need him?
Does he know his brand?
So from
like
the 60s?
The Doors had Touch Me in 1968, and they used a phrase in that song, Stronger Than Dirt, which was also the tagline of...
Tide?
Wasn't Tide. No. Famous Greek king? Does that help?
Zeus?
Ancient
Midas?
Greek king?
Midas?
Greek king.
Around here, we might equate it with car washes.
Ferris Brothers.
Oh, you guys didn't jump on that one. I thought that was a giveaway. Ajax.
I was going to say Jax, but I don't like Jax.
Jax Car Wash. That's
gotcha.
What I was going for.
Okay.
Amber has graciously used Google Earth to locate the exact latitude of the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Do you know what it is? She'll be at least be able to get
like 41 or 42?
It's 42. It's definitely 42.
Okay. The only reason I know is because
we have to get the decimal.
That's what it's got here. 42.138. No, it's 42.41. You said 41 already, so I figured I'd give it to you.
Yeah. No, the only reason I knew it was 42 because of that apartment building around the block from us got the numbers on the sign.
It's true. Why does that one apartment building have the latitude and longitude of the whole joint written on it?
I have no idea. There's an apartment building around the block from us that's got it. And that's the only reason I remember it's 42 degrees and everything else is a blur.
Yeah. Well, and the only thing I think of is that it's a tried and true Michigan tradition to know when you take I-75 north to go on vacation,
parallel.
You're going to pass the 45th
parallel.
It's
at the tip of the Leelanau Peninsula.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, we got to be sort of in the ballpark. And you landed on 41-42 pretty quickly. So,
like I said, that's the only reason I remember, because that apartment building, we drive by.
Who was the name of that third founder of Apple who sold his 10% stake in the company for $800 in 1976?
So Jobs and Wozniak and that guy.
The other guy.
Is it Paul something?
Nope. No, it is initials R.W. First name same as a hamburger slinging clown.
Ronald.
Oh, you guys don't know that one. Second, same name as the county that we're in right now.
Wayne.
Ronald Wayne. Yep.
So how much did he sell it for?
$800.
Ooh, jeez. He's cringing on that
he
one right
now. Worth about what? Did you say billions now? It'd
probably be billions, right? 10%?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yikes. What is on the back of the $2 bill?
The signing of the Declaration of Independence.
That is right.
Oh, Jefferson's on the front, right?
Yes. Yeah,
Jefferson's
that's why.
On the front. Yep, that's right. It's a very complex image. You ever see it up close. What company once required, pay attention here, all of our workers need to be at least 5'2", weigh no more than 130 pounds, and you'll be retired by the age of 32.
It's not UDM.
It's not.
Thank goodness.
It's definitely not. Speaking of 130 pounds.
Flight attendants?
Flight attendants, so.
Pan Am?
Pan Am is what it says, yeah.
Wow, how'd you pull that one out, Dan?
A little catch me if you can there, Dan.
Yeah, catch me if I can.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay.
I watched the series.
Okay.
It was terrible.
Oh.
This is actually a really good... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Oh, no, I thought it was just an interesting premise when they brought that show on. I'm going, flight attendants? Okay, well, whatever.
Sure. They live jet-setting lives.
I guess.
I really, really like this. I'm going to have to commit this one to memory just in general. It's good to conversation. On average, approximately what percentage of movies that Hollywood makes annually are rated G?
There aren't that 13%. Many.
It's less.
No, 8%.
I mean, 7%.
It's less.
No.
3%.
Yeah, the average is 4%.
Wow. Real is
4%.
Because I'm even thinking like some of the Pixar flicks are coming out as PG.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Wow. And then, you know, you guys remember Star Wars came out as PG.
What are some of the main reasons why a movie would go from G to
just
PG?
Just like a little bit of violence. That's all it takes.
Just a little bit of violence.
And sometimes language. Yeah. Sometimes.
Do you remember like the first Star Wars, the only reason it got bumped to PG was because they had the burnt bodies of Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru? But
that's right.
Other than that, there really wasn't anything.
You know, I think you could buy those as like meat figurines.
Yeah, you can.
Did you know that?
Yeah, little charred figurines. Yeah.
No.
Nah, you got to laugh at that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can.
I've seen them on the I see that on the internet, so they must be true. But
well, I mean, the reason that Episode 7 got the PG-13 is twice in the movie, the blood. The blood's on the guy's face, and then the other guy sort of pushes it out of himself. So, which of the contiguous 48 American states has the longest coastline?
We've had this question before.
Yes.
Florida? California or Alaska?
No, contiguous.
Contiguous 48.
Oh, it's not Alaska.
Oh, Michigan.
These are our only choices. Michigan. It's Michigan by a long shot. Something to be proud of for us Michiganders.
So I wonder between Alaska and Michigan, who would win?
Oh, man.
I would guess Alaska.
Pretty sure Alaska is ginormous.
Yeah.
Just feels like it's about
It also
right.
goes up and around, too, so.
I find that those kind of questions are the best ones to either ask Siri or ask Google. Yeah. They respond with, like, all the other information that you need. And if I had my phone here, I'd give it a try right now. What, better known for being a comedic actor, did the voiceover narration in the original 1974 Texas Chainsaw Massacre? I've heard this in trivia only because, I'll be honest, I've never seen the film.
I've seen the film.
Who did the voiceover? He's a comedian?
Yeah, but we would know him better as a comedian. That's right.
Well, it couldn't be like Daniel Stern.
No, I think he would be a little young. You need someone older.
Who's a comedian? Like a Leslie Nielsen?
I'm trying to think of the best way to bring this one out, because if I just said one thing, I think it would tip the scales. But what if I said Night Court?
Harry Anderson?
Nope.
Who played Bull?
Not Bull.
Would he be too
old? John Larroquette, then.
It was John Larroquette, yeah. Yes.
He was a voiceover?
A voiceover in that movie. It was like a
I was going to say he's a comedian.
No, I don't know. I mean, he didn't.
Look, Dan, I didn't say he was a good comedic actor.
That show is really one of the great.
It's true.
It's one of those classics.
Show. It's true.
Yeah. I would watch it if it were.
And then there was also that thing about the bailiff always dying off on.
That's
tragic.
Especially the early days. Always the early days.
Who was the first member of the original Not Ready for Primetime Players, so Saturday Night Live troupe, that was hired by Lorne Michaels? So who's the first person
John Belushi?
No.
Chevy Chase?
Well, maybe I misheard you. Chuck, you said?
Dan Aykroyd?
No, it wasn't Dan Aykroyd. You're going to narrow it down. Belushi. There were only six of them.
Joe Murray. Rosanna, Dan.
Belushi.
Oh, Gilda Radner, then.
Gilda Radner, yeah.
It's more fun to say Rosanna.
Rosanna.
Easy for you to say.
Okay, we'll repeat Rosanna Dana to us while we take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor.
Flashback.
1968.
I'm the man with all of the questions and most of the answers, Bill Raby. On my right is history professor Frederick H. Hayes.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Fred. Normally on my left is Russell McLaughlin, but he's in Spain looking after some stock that the University of Detroit owns. And this leaves our guest middleman, Lawrence Kanjar, who is dean of the College of Engineering.
All along.
No, what you're doing is replacing three people. The questions you had in the program are submitted by listeners. If you stump the experts, you will receive a subscription to a national magazine, the Atlantic, Harper's, or American. We have some amplification here. First of all, from Hanaban, Louisiana, Mrs. Elizabeth R. Beale. I heard a program last Saturday morning on WWL Radio that I understand was taped by the University of Detroit. You understand correctly. The question asked was, who named the flag Old Glory? Well, I know that William Driver called the flag Old Glory. William Driver was the master of the brig Charles Daggett. He raised the flag on his ship August the 10th, 1831, saying, I name thee Old Glory. Have you heard that story before, friend?
No, I haven't.
Well, it must be true.
The interesting question now is, how does everybody else find out? How does something like this come into general usage?
Oh, the members of his crew blabbed as soon as they hit ashore, you know.
Yes, you're at the old man. What a dumb thing.
Good PR man on the ship.
Yeah.
And we are back with some great cookies, some great Kit Kats, and some great questions from Amber Hubley. Ironically, the next question from Amber Hubley is about Kit Kats.
Oh.
No way.
It was a time the Kit Kat bar was packaged in a blue, not red, wrapper. Why did this happen?
Why was it blue?
Why was it blue?
Why did they change it to red?
Was it different flavor? Dark chocolate?
Did they have another candy bar that was in red? Mint?
You know, it said that it was because it was dark chocolate, but the bigger question is, why were they making dark chocolate Kit Kat and no milk chocolate Kit Kats?
It was cheaper?
Was there milk ration for any?
Yeah. Milk ration, World War II. That's what it says. Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Did you just go back to World War II?
Apparently, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that.
Interesting.
It's an old candy.
I guess
I didn't realize that.
Old stuff.
Jeez.
Oh, my. Let's see. I mean, she wants them all, so this is going to be tough, but let's just see how far we can go. There are 7 total James Bond movies that only have one word in the title.
Moonraker?
Yes.
Thunderball?
Octopussy?
Octopussy, Thunderball.
Spectre.
Well, you know what?
Skyfall.
Spectre is here, and Skyfall is here. My bad.
Those are fairly new. I mean,
missing two.
Goldfinger?
Goldfinger and?
Oh.
Something else with that element in the title.
Goldeneye.
Wasn't that Pierce Brosnan's first?
Maybe first or second.
Yeah.
Did you see Spectre, the latest one?
Did not see it.
It's excellent.
It's really good. Darn it. My dad is the one that I go to. He's like, he only goes to see 2 movies ever. If it has a submarine... I'm not joking. Or the newest James Bond, and he was unimpressed, and so it scared me away, and I probably should check it out.
No, I thought Skyfall was very good, and I really like Spectre.
Okay.
That's his last one, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
I heard he was going to come back for 2 more.
Oh, 2 more? I like him, too, but I thought he was done.
Yeah, I thought he's doing his
Star Wars things now. So
that's right.
Star Trek.
Who is?
James Bond.
Daniel Craig was
Daniel Craig.
Star Wars.
Yeah. He's a Star Wars.
Did you know that?
He's a trooper, man.
Oh, do we give it away?
You're lying.
No!
Seriously?
The one that Ray does the Jedi mind trick to?
That's him. Craig. When he says, drop the gun.
But anybody could be under those masks.
But it's his voice. But it's his voice.
Yeah. It's him. Mm-hmm.
Really?
At minimum, it's his voice.
Because, they could raffle those off.
I know.
Yeah. And they could make a lot of money.
I would love to be a stormtrooper.
Oh, it would be cool. That'd be in the bucket list.
Now, you ready for this?
That'd be in the bucket list.
I had 2 friends of mine that were stormtroopers when they did the re-release.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they had from the first movie, they did the re-release where they filled out more stormtroopers. There were 2 of the stormtroopers in the background during the re-release, not during the first one.
That's cool.
But she was one that when she told him to release the gun.
Yes.
And
leave the door open.
Leave the door open. Unhook their things.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how can you tell? I mean, it's got a...
Well, it looks just like him. Didn't you see him? It looked just like him.
Yeah.
And we've also got some swampland in Nevada we'd like to sell you, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you, Chuck.
Last one here from Amber. From which country did the dance The Limbo originate?
Bahamas?
Hawaii? Bahamas is good, but it's not. I think we should stay in the Caribbean.
Trinidad and Tobago?
Yeah, that's Trinidad.
Okay.
Yeah, very well done. You guys did really good. What are we saying here? They always leave it up to me to make the grading scale.
Yeah,
I'm scared to death to do that, so pass.
Yeah.
Awesome. UDM history professor Greg Sumner has written a new book called Detroit in World War II, just published by the History Press. Here are 5 questions that its readers would be able to answer. These were not supplied by Greg Sumner. They're supplied by Roy Finkenbein, helping his colleague faculty member get the word out about this really, really great book.
Which was there at the Detroit Trivia.
Right. I bet it was.
Right.
I bet it was.
He was signing them like a fiend.
That's awesome. Henry and Ezel Ford built the largest bomber plant in the world in 1941 west of Detroit at the insistence of the old man so they could avoid Wayne County taxes. How wonderful. Its name comes from a small creek that meandered through the property when they bought it. What is it called?
Willow Run?
Willow Run. Willow Run, indeed. The largest bomber plant in the world. 2 of the most popular radio shows of the World War II years were made in Detroit. Could you name one of them?
Lone Ranger?
Yeah, Lone Ranger.
That's one of them.
Green Hornet?
Green Hornet's the other.
Oh, you're too fast.
The blank.
I don't either. I'm just winging it.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. This West Side Detroit ballroom, home to Jitterbuggers and Lindy Hoppers during World War II, was later famous for hosting really rowdy concerts by rock groups.
Yeah, Grandy Ballroom. Yeah, by yes. Grand River and Southfield.
Yep. Thereabouts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. MC5. Yep. I could barely get through it. Blah, yep. blah, blah, blah. Anyway, yeah, that's great. Grandy Ballroom. Everybody looks at it and thinks grand, but it's Grandy.
Yep.
Tiger legend and war hero Hank Greenberg hit a grand slam in the last game of the 1945 season to put the Detroit into the World Series. Which National League team did they beat in that series in 7 games?
The Cubs?
The Cubbies. I think that was that Detroit's first World Series win? Or did we win in 35 as well? Always mess that up. We only have 4, so I should be able to remember them. And of course, 2016, you know, that'll happen this year too.
Knock on wood.
Oh yeah, okay.
Hey. During the World War II years, Detroit had a streetcar system over 500 miles long, going up and down the major arteries of the city. What year did the last of the streetcars rumble down Woodward Avenue?
72?
You know, it was quite a bit earlier than that, according to this.
55?
Yeah, 56, yeah. So I'll give it to you. Yeah, it was pretty much...
And now they're putting them back in, sort of-ish.
Sort of-ish, yeah. Yes. It was an idea.
It's always strange going up Woodward from school and then seeing this.
Seeing those
tracks. There's tracks in the road.
Yep, that's right.
See if they would have kept that.
It would have been easy to build.
It's the infrastructure.
It would have been like Toronto.
Oh, there's so many possibilities. We'll see what happens. That M1, man, it's tying up traffic.
Yeah, boy.
I avoid it.
When can it end is all I'm saying. You know?
Supposedly 2017, they're going to start running. Call me a lifelong Detroit agnostic, but we'll see what happens. I'm optimistic but guarded, that's all.
Okay. We've got some questions here from Amy Dixon. A quick list of 10 questions composed here as I await the ferry boat over to British Columbia this fine morning. Thank goodness for a free and strong Wi-Fi. The questions are all across the spectrum, hopefully somewhat thought-provoking as well as challenging. 80% shall be considered passing, like it's ever stopped the panelists before. Best wishes, yeah. Amy Dixon of Port Angeles, Washington. See what we can do with these. Which cartoon character, or maybe it'd be better to say comic character, is the mother to Baby Dumpling and Cookie?
Blondie.
Blondie, yeah, absolutely.
Remember
I remember Cookie is her daughter, but I don't remember Baby Dumpling.
Baby Dumpling was the boy.
Was the boy as a young kid.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah. All right. When I used to read, they call it Blondie, Dagwood.
Yeah, more Dagwood than Blondie.
The paper stopped carrying it.
Oh, do you guys remember the movies?
Yeah, they made movies. That's right.
Was it Penny Singleton as Blondie? Okay.
I don't know who played Dagwood, though.
Wow.
Yeah, he was just absolutely disheveled constantly. That's all.
Yeah.
What are the two movies where James Earl Jones and Madge Sinclair star as a royal couple?
Oh, Coming to America.
That's definitely one of them.
Yeah, Jason would know that one in a heartbeat.
Are they related?
No, I wouldn't say Coming to America and this film are very closely related. Coming to America was sort of a boisterous American comedy. And the other one is a not boisterous animated musical.
Oh, Aladdin?
Not Aladdin, but...
Lion King.
Lion King.
Lion King.
Yep, I'm thinking James Earl Jones, animated. Okay,
cartoon.
Gotcha. Yep.
Yeah. You must avenge my death, Kimba. I mean, Simba. What 1960s variety show was hosted by Jimmy O'Neill? That's like the most generic name I've ever heard.
Jimmy O'Neill? Variety show in the 60s?
I actually know the answer to this one.
Really?
Not just because I'm reading it.
Because it was comedian? Is Jimmy O'Neill a comedian?
I never heard of the guy.
Across the street from the Berkeley Public Library, where I spent a lot of my youth, I hate to say, there was a little party store that had this name. And every time my mom drove by, she mentioned, oh, there used to be a TV show by the same name. So that's how I know this. It's a happening word from the 60s for something's about to go down or a party or something. Starts with an SH.
A shindig.
A shindig. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Jim Thompson always talked about that.
Yep.
So what do they do on shindig?
I'm guessing it was like sort of a dance fever thing.
Like an American Bandstand
kind of thing? Yeah, American Bandstand.
Okay.
Big funny from the other night, if you want to go check it out, by the way. Since I spent a lot of the weekend bedridden with the original illness I had. My wife subjected me because she's a big fan of the live Grease that they had on. It was on Fox.
Yeah, last week.
And the guy playing the, you know, Jimmy O'Neill, the American Bandstand role was... what's his name from Extra, the guy from Saved by the Bell, Mario
Lopez.
Lopez. Yeah. So he's supposed to, because of course Grease is supposed to be quote-unquote non-denominational with regard to when it came out. He's supposed to be the host of National Bandstand. It's a live show. Mario keeps referring to it as American Bandstand the whole time. Like, the ghost of Dick Clark is like rising. Did he just say that? And we did the whole, you know, replay and everything, and pretty funny. Pretty funny stuff. Who was the longest reigning? So too bad we have to qualify it this way. Elected Pope. So modern era Pope,
so
I think.
So wasn't John Paul II, was it?
It wasn't.
Oh.
You know, it wasn't. I think he was a little short. When you look at this one, considering how long popes go, this is a pretty big deal. 31 years.
Wow. Ooh. Where's Jim Tubbs when we need him?
I know.
He would know this in a heartbeat.
He would.
Well, it would be the same as that electric Toyota car, except for missing the R.
Pious?
Yeah, so pick a number.
The 42nd.
It's the 9th. Partial credit.
Okay, mind you, this is where we need Kendra to nail down the numbers for us. That's all.
We had that joke a couple weeks ago of Pope Sixtus the 5th. Pope Fiftus the 6th. That's one of my favorites of all time now. Okay. In Muppet lore, how about we just start a question with that? What is Fozzie Bear's mother's name?
What?
When was that ever mentioned?
I don't even
know. That's crazy.
You know, it fits the bill.
Is it
Fuzzy? Gertrude.
Is it a play on the bear theme or anything?
There
like
is
that?
Nothing special Darn. About this name.
Harriet?
So, like a Gladys?
You guys are just so in the window, I'm giving it to you.
Hazel.
Emily? I mean, what?
Emily.
All right, sure.
Oh, thanks.
Emily in Bear? Muppet lore, I triple, quadruple dog dare our listenership to give me even just 10 questions where every question starts with, in Muppet lore.
Man, you know, why would you know I, why there's would somebody I dare out them? There that's going to take you up on that
episode.
Offer.
Really?
And then we're, it's going to be like Kermit the Frog shoe size or something like that.
Kermit
we'll all be doomed.
Kermit T. Frog. What recording artist has albums named Hunky Dory, Diamond Dogs, and Black Tie, White Noise? You guys should know this.
Thank you.
It's David Bowie.
David Bowie. Black Tie, White Noise, I recognize.
Yeah, I remember Diamond Dogs.
God rest his soul.
We're going to have to, God rest him, yes, we're going to have to say goodbye. Professor Dan.
Have a great weekend.
Professor Chuck.
TGIF.
Professor Dave.
See ya.
Now these words.
I don't want to just read the book. I want to write the book.
I don't want to just work for the company. I want to own the company.
I don't want to just live in the building. I want to design the building.
To some, those might sound like rather lofty goals. Maybe a little out of reach.
I don't want to drive a sports car. Well, I do. I want to engineer one.
At University of Detroit Mercy, those are the people we want. The big thinkers. The dreamers. Because those are the people who make things happen. Great things. For themselves and others. And if you're one of them, either just out of high school or ready to transfer, UDM will make it happen for you. Call 1-800-635-5020 today or apply online at www.udmercy.edu. It's not too late.
I don't want to just hope for the cure. I want to discover the cure.
University of Detroit Mercy. We want great things for you.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.